Hi,
and welcome to Melanin Meditations. I'm Ashley Danielle, registered holy yoga instructor, business owner, and busy mom extraordinaire. I invite you to take a few moments to slow down, calm your spirit, and rest your heart with me. As women, we are often thought of as weak because of our very existence. As women of color, another weight is added to the load we already carry, as we are also often considered to lack intelligence. This is a place to let your strength be known and allow your resilience to reign. Hey y'all, I am so excited that we are finally getting able to start the part of my podcast where I get to invite you all to hang out with me and some of my closest friends, where we just discuss some topics that have kind of just been on my heart and things that I'm passionate about that I hope you guys are passionate about. And we can just kind of have some girl chat. We can kind of flow through the tough times, we can celebrate the good times. And my prayer is that while you're listening to this, that you will take a minute to pause, to break away from the busy of the day and just tune into what we're saying. So if you're at work, if you're on break and you can put your ear pods in and just kind of tune out for a second and tune into what we're saying. If you're at home, you can sit on the couch, grab some wine, kick your feet up, whatever it is, you know, or green juice, I guess, whatever it is that we do. Whatever it is we yogi people do, yeah, as they put us in these boxes. No, yoga people don't drink vodka, but whatever it is that you want to do to unwind and just listen to us chat. I have a dear friend of mine today, a new friend, but a really good friend that you just heard giggling. Because I'm hilarious, apparently, because people giggle at me all the time. But I invited her here because she started out as one of my yoga students, and we realized that we have a few things in common, but one major thing in common, and that is our heart for people in general. I'm not going to say women in crisis pregnancy situations. I'm going to say people in crisis pregnancy situations, because we don't forget about our fellas who are in those situations as well. And we both have been just like really in the thick of that in different ways. And I would love for her to just share some of her journey with you guys today. So if you want to just introduce yourself real quick before we get into it, girl.
Sure. Thank you, Ashley, for having me on.
Of course.
My name is Amisha Kay, and I'm a wife, a fur mommy, and I'm a girl that just likes girl chat. And ooh, so we're not going to be, like she said, leaving out the fellas, but I do want to kind of focus on just girl time and our time and it just be me time.
Yeah, I love it. And shout out to all the fur mamas who yes, listen to the podcast. Yes, because you guys know I have my two, but yeah, I give mad respect to the fur mamas, because yeah, Ashley ain't got no doll.
We ain't here.
Ashley ain't getting no doll. So y'all on a whole nother level of fabulousness that I'm,
yes,
not.
We are.
And we're gonna respect that. Okay, so one thing that she has done, we're gonna jump right into it. You volunteered, keyword.
Yes, correct.
As a crisis pregnancy counselor, like what's the exact title?
They call it counselor, and some people call it a lay person, mm-hmm, or a peer counselor.
Peer counselor, okay.
So you can just take either or.
And you did that at a local women's resource center here.
Yes.
And here, just tell us a little more about what that experience was like for us. Like, what exactly did you do as a peer counselor? What did that entail?
Okay, so I would say we majorly, let's see how we put it. We took care of women that were not necessarily all the time in a crisis pregnancy, mm-hmm, but majority of the time sought us out to be, you know, because they were in a crisis pregnancy. So we would actually bring them in, give them their options, just kind of see what kind of state of mind they were in,
okay,
and then presented their options to them. And then at the end of the day, we would still walk alongside of them, we would walk alongside them. It didn't matter like what choice they chose, because we were there for the women and we were not there to win a debate.
I love you. A word, We were there for the women. We were not there to win a debate.
Yes.
Whatever your decision is, we will let you know what we would want you to do.
Yes.
We'll pray for you in this way.
Yes.
But whatever your decision is, you're my sister.
Yes.
We love you. How do you need me now?
Yes. That is our mission.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I love that. So, first of all, that's heavy.
Yes, it is really heavy.
So, when you first decided, I want to do this, you went through the training. What was the training like to be able to go through that?
Training was... it was easy and hard at the same time. And I would say easy because I'm not going to say anybody can learn to counsel women, but hard at the same time that you had to, before you could become a peer counselor, you had to look at your own stuff.
Oh, okay, that's good.
And so you could not counsel anyone if you haven't did other kind of training. If you were post the border for anything like that, you had to literally do it your own stuff.
Okay, so post abortive. What does that mean? That's like that's like a unicorn word.
Okay, post abortive. So sorry for you guys who are listening. Post abortive is when a girl decides that she's going to have an abortion, and after that abortion, she needs some kind of counseling to further her along her journey. So it's anybody that's had an abortion previous. So post is kind of anything after. It can be, you know, when they say post-op from surgery, it's just after something. Mm-hmm. So that's what post means.
And one thing I came across is that, I know even with my book, that I mentioned that post-abortive also, I always say post-abortive means anyone who's had an abortion experience.
Yeah.
And we say abortion experience because that doesn't necessarily mean it was you. Post-abortive could also be a mother who made her daughter have one. A best friend who encouraged her friend to have one, and then later they're feeling some kind of way about it, and they just need help fleshing that out. They're not quite sure where they stand now. Like, what am I doing?
I think that's an accurate term. Mm-hmm. I think.
Oh, and people who used to work in abortion clinics.
I think that is an accurate term and an accurate description of what post-abortion really looks like. Because you're right, it's not just the girl that actually had the physical experience. It's everybody that walked alongside of her throughout that experience.
Okay. So you go through the training. How long was your training?
The post-abortive training was about... it was an 8-week class.
Okay.
And so once you got through with that, you still had to actually do more training. Mm-hmm. So that...
oh, that's weird. That's
right.
So y'all like qualified.
Yes, we were like training.
Good, okay. But that's good to know because when you're dealing with that, you don't want somebody who kind of just walked in and said, hey, I think sometimes people hear the term volunteer and they think that they don't have the same qualifications. That lacks credentials.
Right.
That you just volunteer. Like, if I want to volunteer at Habitat for Humanity, I really kind of show up and they show me how to use a shovel and how to use a hammer. You know, don't use the gun thing or you might kill someone.
Right.
But they don't make me go through classes for weeks.
Totally agree. But it's definitely, it's an 8-week class, but on top of that, based on, and we actually have a ceremony after that particular class. And then you have to go through more training. And I would say my training lasted longer than probably anybody. Because I didn't want to fly.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to hold on to my teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure if this was something... I knew God called me there. But I wasn't for sure if God could sustain me there.
Okay.
So... I would say I took at least a good another 8 weeks to go in on my own, to have my own
class. I respect you for saying that because hard for some Christians to admit that I'm staying where I am because I'm not ready to let God take me somewhere else.
Amen.
We often feel like I'm staying where I am and we're crying out to God, God, why am I stuck here? I can't move. And he's like, I'm totally waiting to take you.
I'm waiting and you're just holding on and you're not going to be any, you know, God gives us free will. And that was my thing. And I think what made a big difference for me is the women that were in my life that could see my potential when I couldn't see it.
Okay.
So that was instrumental to me.
Okay. So, you finally let go of your teacher.
Yes.
And got off of her leg.
Yes.
and now it's your first person to come in, and you are in the room, in the counseling room, and it's them. And what is that like?
I have to be honest. Mm-hmm. It is heavy. Mm-hmm. It's something that you realize, God, you have, what's the words? Entrusted me with somebody else's life. Mm-hmm. So I don't take that lightly. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of prayer that goes on behind the scenes, because mm-hmm. everybody that comes in is not a believer. Mm-hmm. And we're not trying to convert you. That's not our job. And so going into that room, I do remember my very first client, and it was thrilling, amazing, and heartbreaking all in the same sentence. High schooler, aspirations to college, and just me being able to see myself in her, mm-hmm. but at the same time not make her decision for her.
Gotcha.
So it was a very enlightening experience, and I knew after that very first client, this is what I wanted to do. Yeah, and that first client.
I love that too, that you didn't just say, you know, it was good, it was so fulfilling, it was so great. You're like, it was great, but it was hard, man.
Right.
But you still wanted to do it. Yes. It's not that you're like, this is hard, this is heavy.
Yes.
And I feel like sometimes when stuff is hard and heavy, that's the confirmation that I need to do this, because this needs to be done.
Right. It needs to be done.
And I'm here. Might as well be me.
Right. And So I would totally agree with Ashley on that one. It's easier to run away from it than actually sit there and face what needs to be done. Girl, no. You guys were like,
I should have recorded this like with a camera so I could see the face I just made. That was
a good face.
She said it's easier to run away than stay and face the thing.
Girl, that's a tweet.
That's a tweet.
That's a meme. Yes, that is true.
Okay, so you know that I went through the post-abortion healing class at the Women's Resource Center too.
Yes.
And I say I was one of the people who approached the class from a mindset of I didn't need it. Mm. That I was good. I'm like, this was a while ago. I am completely healed from this. I understand, you know, I understand God's salvation. I understand his redemption. I understand, you know, me being a new creation. I got that.
Right.
So I'm going to be a counselor now to help the other people.
Right.
They don't know. And I need
kind of like
when you're in church and the pastor preaching, you're like, that is for somebody. Like, right. I wish so-and-so was here. And he was like, that was for you. But anyway, so I remember starting class, and I went through the first 2 weeks and still was like, I'm like, this is good. This is gonna help someone that's not me.
Right.
And it wasn't until I got to like the third or fourth week, and we got to a portion about anger.
Yes.
And I definitely didn't think that related to me, because I'm like, I'm not angry at anybody. I'm not upset with myself. I'm not upset with anybody else. I made this decision. No one forced me. Like, I'm not angry. And I remember we were going through it, and people who know me, won't be shocked. Like, I literally can hear God talk to me. Like, not like a feeling, like.
Right. You can actually hear him.
I hear him. That's how he communicates with me. Like, right. You know, we chat.
You and God chatted up.
Yeah. And like, I literally could hear him say the person's name who was the father of the child.
Okay.
And I remember saying back, I was driving in the car. I remember saying back, I'm not mad with him.
Wow.
Yeah, and he said it again.
Wow.
And I went home and I thought about it for a second. And what the class did for me is it made me realize, one, that I had a savior complex with a man instead of like the son of man. That was my issue. And that he had been the person for years in my life who swept in and rescued me when something was wrong. and protected me from so much. I remember, this is so kind of off topic, but y'all follow me down this rabbit trail for a minute. That I remember I was, this is so crazy. I remember my last semester of undergrad.
Okay.
And I was so broke. My mom was sick. She was in a coma. I had lost one of my jobs on campus. I was so stupid broke. And a mutual friend at the time, she was working at Hooters.
Okay.
And she was talking about how much money she was making at Hooters. So I was like, I can work at Hooters. And she was just working like weekends. I'm like, I could definitely work at Hooters on Saturday and Sunday and make like a good $400.
Right, pick up this extra money.
And be good. And I remember telling him that I was about to go, I had applied and I was going in for this interview at Hooters, and he said so calm and nonchalantly, no, you're not.
Wow.
And I'm like, but I am, I'm gonna.
You gotta do this because you need this. Because
I need, he's like, no, he was like, how much, what do you need? And literally sent money to my Wells Fargo account. Now, that's good, that's sweet, but that's also fueling me putting my trust in him to rescue me. Even though I didn't ask him to, he was always doing it. So back to the class, I remember getting home and I was thinking about it and just going over the situation. I was like, you know, reading the book that was provided, it was good to help me kind of think about, was I angry?
Right.
What are different ways that anger could manifest? Because thank you, because we think of anger and we think of rage.
Right.
And anger is not, anger is quiet sometimes.
Yes, anger is not necessarily rage.
Yeah, so I remember thinking about it and I ended up calling him. He already knew I was going through the class. I'd already told him because we were still friends.
Okay.
And I told him, I realized that, and I said, first, I need you to know I'm not upset with you, but I need you to know that I was angry with you, and I think I've been angry with you because I'm so used to you protecting me, and right then you didn't protect me.
Right. You're waiting for him to say something.
And he said so calmly and so quickly, he said, I know. And he said, I'm sorry. He said, I figured you always felt like that. And he said, because he felt like that, that he didn't do what he was, not what he was supposed to do. Because that's not his job. You see what I'm saying? But he didn't do what he normally would have done to protect me.
In any other situation.
Exactly. Yeah. He was protecting this imaginary future that we have. And that's,
oh, I love that.
That has a lot to do with, when it comes to abortion,
yes,
we are protecting this future that we think we're going to have.
That's so true.
That nobody even told us we were going to have. That we're just certain that this will be the thing that will ruin that. And I've had people tell me now, and they're like, Ashley, you were just saying it. You're doing so much.
You're doing so much.
And I'm like, when you think about the stuff you sacrificed for a certain kind of life, how dare you not go through with it?
That's so
how
true.
Dare I make that kind, that extreme of a sacrifice, and then just be lazy somewhere?
That's so true.
Like, dang,
it's we're laughing because we both had healing. On
we're not psychopaths.
So yeah, right, we're not psychopaths or anything like that. But to your point, that is so. I want to kind of go back to my journey on that little bit, just to piggyback
in the class.
Mm-hmm. In the class, I remember taking the class and seeing, and guys, don't burn me at the stake because I'm just being real. I literally had to have someone drive me there, and then when I got there, I said, "What does God have anything to do with this?" Mm-hmm. I knew I needed help, but he was not the help. So my teacher, on the other hand, she didn't make me feel bad. She didn't judge me. Mm-hmm. The only thing she did was say, just show up next week. That was all I needed to do, is just to show up. And sometimes that's all we need to do as Christians, or
show up.
You know, not even just as Christians, just as human beings, just to show up for somebody else. That's all I needed to do. So that really.
And then, how you just said, for somebody else, because you were going through the classes with the intent of counseling. But you're like, I need to finish this and really immerse myself in it so that I can help somebody too. I don't need to just BS my way through this. I need to take this seriously.
Correct.
So, okay. So, first session has gone through.
Okay.
Now you're doing it. What is it that you would say was most challenging and most, how long were you counseling?
It's been 5 years.
Great. Ooh, look at you.
5 years. Okay. A whole council over here.
Whole council.
A whole council.
So, what would you say has been most challenging and most rewarding?
I would say the most challenging would be, and I'm being totally honest, guys, not seeing someone in this particular arena mm-hmm. that look like me.
Ooh, go there.
And keep what going. I mean by look like me, a black girl, an African American girl, I just didn't see anybody that looked like me. So as I love all the women that were there, it was kind of hard to build a specific kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. So that was really, really challenging. And I think the most rewarding was is when I was able to have conversations with them about my blackness mm-hmm. and not have to feel like it was a racial topic mm-hmm. or a racial target. Yeah. And they could understand my way of thinking and not think that I was radicalized.
Okay. Since we took it there, let's stay there. Okay. I have a couple questions. So out of the women who you have, women, teenagers, I know yes. it spans. I've taken several young girls that I've mentored to the Women's Resource Center.
Gotcha.
For their first ultrasounds. I get that call often. Miss Ashley,
aww.
I think, all right, let's go.
Yes, let's go. I got it. On that one.
I've taken several girls there from like 14.
Right.
Yeah.
The ages vary.
And when it comes to the demographic, what race are you seeing the most at the actual Women's Resource Center?
I would say we see probably majority African American race.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that just to say that. I'm serious. Let's just say I saw 5 clients mm-hmm. today. Probably 3 will be black clients. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was, wow, and I don't think it was meant to be this way, but I just think as black women, we don't know where we can get in, where we fit in. We don't know if this is for us or if we can be in these kind of spaces.
What do you mean?
I mean by, will my opinion and will my thoughts be valid? Mm-hmm. to you.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm counseling or I would say talking with another young lady that's of color,
mm-hmm.
my approach to her is totally different.
It changes. You code switch.
Yes.
You totally code switch.
It's
when
like we have two different personalities.
It's a whole other person.
Right. It's a whole other person that shows up.
But they appreciate it.
And they appreciate it. And that's another thing. They can tell when you're being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a thing that a lot of people could not understand. They would always say I would have long counseling sessions, which probably was the truth, but I needed to dig down deep.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we don't have that. So as volunteering, I think that would give you a great opportunity to give some of your time so that you can just dig down deep and see where the girls are coming from and why they came here to begin with.
Okay. So I know this from reading, just from even reading Unplanned back in the day.
Yes.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the movie yet.
I haven't either.
We need to go see that.
Yes, we
need
do.
To watch that.
Okay, girl.
But I know, right? So reading Unplanned by Abby Johnson, if you guys want to check it out. Reading Unplanned back in the day and just statistics. I got really involved in the statistical side of the abortion industry in itself.
Yes.
And I did a lot of research back in around like 2011. And learning 2010, like learning the numbers and the dollar amounts that the abortion industry puts into marketing towards families of color.
Right.
And that's their biggest client.
Yes.
And they're totally aware of this because they're a business and it's like, you know, they do some things, but they're a business and they're putting their money to market towards that community. But then I felt like on the flip side, the industry that is supposed to be healing these women afterwards, or, you know, preventative is great. Because me and you have two right. different, well, not me and you, but some people have two different stances. I'm not in the abortion battle on the strictly preventative side. I'm there, gotcha. Of course. Y'all know gotcha. Where my heart is. But my heart is for the women who've already been there. They already made the decision.
Gotcha.
Because we all fighting for the ones. Like, please don't. We have adoption. We can help you. We got that. Okay, that's great. The one who already did, though, where does she go?
Right.
Because now she feels like she can't go anywhere. So that's, like, my side. But I feel like that side is not catering their marketing, or not marketing, because it's a lot of volunteer work,
right.
but getting their marketing and services out to families of color as much. But I'm like, wait, so if the numbers are showing that the majority of the women who are having abortions are women of color,
right.
and it's specifically African-American and Latino women.
Latino, yes.
So
black and brown girls.
Yes, the black and brown girls.
Mm-hmm.
That's the majority. But then all of the post-abortion healing curriculums,
yes,
are all or primarily
Caucasian
women on the cover,
yes,
on the inside, on yes. the video. They yes. wrote the book,
yes.
They lead the workshop,
yes,
on the flyer, the poster. You're yes. just like,
yes.
So who are you marketing this book to? Like the 12% of the women who, you know? And I mean, I just threw that number out there.
But it's like. There.
That's why I think it's important for other women of color to get on this side of it to help women who have been down that road. And even on your side of it,
yes.
of I'm in the room because when this young 16-year-old girl walked into this center, which is absolutely gorgeous and very homey when you walk in.
It really is.
It doesn't feel like any kind of doctor's office or anything.
At all.
But she walks in. And she's probably a young black girl from yes. where we grew up or whatever. Yes. And she does not see a bunch of other white people. She didn't grow up like that.
Right.
She's a little nervous. But when you open the door,
yes.
she got comfortable.
And to speak directly to that, I mean, Ashley, I don't even know if she actually knew this, but that's kind of where my sense is on the other side of that fence. And I'm with you. I saw the numbers, but what would always baffle me, and like you said, is but I don't see the women that look like me on the other side of the fence.
Like, how many people think, like, I already know the answer to this, and but like at the clinic, at the center,
at
how
the
many
center,
women?
I mean, if how, I'm just gonna be
how's
honest,
the diversity?
It's
getting better now,
it's getting better now.
The new CEO is doing an absolutely amazing job,
much better now. But I would say that. Diversity was not, we were not diverse at all. A lot of times I would be called in to help particular cases or particular types of women because there was nobody else that looked yeah. like me. So I went from volunteering once a week mm-hmm. to sometimes needing to be there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and doing a class on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So the need is so great, but I wished people on the other side of this pro-life community would be in the brown and black community, mm-hmm. the ones that is affecting the most.
Mm-hmm.
Because do I think abortion is going to go anywhere anytime soon? I don't know. But what I do know is women are still being hurt to this day.
Yeah.
So that doesn't negate the fact that we need to be there. And we're just not there. We're really just not there. And that's why I love you, Ashley, as a friend that
Aww.
Is saying, hey, let's go there. Let's talk about these things. Because having a conversation is different from having a debate.
Exactly.
We're not here for no debate. Ain't nobody got time for a debate. That's not what we're here to do.
Ain't nobody got time to be debating you.
No. we're just here to literally
delete, like a whole child, know. A whole child just died and a whole woman is in the corner crying. I don't have time to debate you.
No debates here.
And not just a whole woman, and a whole man is somewhere in his car. Family. He's confused about what just happened, feeling like he's less of a man because he couldn't step up and be who she needed and stuff. Because I get those men in my DMs too.
I'm sure you do.
Who I get the men who are like, or the men who is who they say, I didn't even know she was pregnant. She that told me about so the prevalent. Abortion later.
That's so prevalent.
And I'm mourning, and people feel like I don't have a right to mourn. And that is so hurtful how we do men to make them feel like they don't have a right to mourn. And again, we're not debating. I'm not getting into the debate with y'all about how a man can make a decision on a woman's body. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about is, okay, the decision was made. He didn't know. This man just lost a child.
Yes.
The same way that if the day you find out you're pregnant and you want the baby, that excitement that you have.
Yes.
He just lost that.
I agree.
That man is broken in a way. The men who feel that way. Not all men feel that way, but there are so many who do.
Right. And that's who and we're actually speaking
That's who
towards.
We're talking right. to. And it's like, we have to have, we're all, the culture right now is all in this whole mindset of representation matters. Representation yes. matters. We need to see ourselves in all these different fields yes. and all these different arenas. And I'm like, this is another arena
yes.
where we need to see ourselves when we walk in so that I can look at it and say, oh, okay, this is for me too. Like, this is, haha, me too.
Right.
Like,
exactly. This is exactly. Yeah, right. I like, love this, that. Haha, me too.
Like, this is for me too. So,
That was, and what was really important is that my facilitator that did my class, she was a brown woman. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I would have stayed if she
See, mine wasn't. I was the only one in my class.
That was the amazing part of mm-hmm. my journey because I don't know if I would have stayed.
That was also 2010.
Okay, and I went in 2013. There you go.
Look at the progression. Look at the progression.
We're progressing.
Shout out to, and like right. I said, the center that we were at, but you're still, you know, volunteer. We said it didn't have a lot of diversity at the beginning.
At the beginning.
But also, that's not a stab to the center. That's not the center's fault.
Oh, no, absolutely
that is,
not.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, the listeners know.
Absolutely not.
It's because of us as people not going to the center and saying, I want to volunteer.
Right.
That's not their fault.
And I think that's why we got to get the word out that other women of color need to come forward to help other
in
women
some kind of way
cross that line. Right. It doesn't have to be you volunteering. It can honestly just be you bringing someone
there. I was just about to say.
Or it can be someone that you are just supportive on the phone and say, hey, I know a resource. So the women's, you know, the mm-hmm. the place that we were affiliated with, it definitely isn't a jab to them because they loved every race that came through the door.
Yeah.
And it's more on our side as Black women to go out in the community and say, hey, we need you here. We need you here. There's someone on the other side waiting for you to go to freedom.
Yeah.
They're waiting for that extension to say, you can come to freedom with me.
Like there is a, you know, 18-year-old
yeah.
or 27-year-old,
yes,
you know, Black woman who just walked into my office and I couldn't find anyone in this office who she could thoroughly relate to hand her to because
yes.
no one was here.
No one.
You know what I mean?
That's not
okay.
That isn't okay. And it reminds me of, I'm not gonna give any names out, but the person that's probably listening knows exactly who I'm talking about. I remember a day, it was a really, really hard day, and this particular girl did not want to be pregnant. It did not matter who saw her, she just did not want to be pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And this medical professional will remain nameless. She just listened to what she was saying and went into the room with her scared out of her mind.
Mm-hmm.
Literally physically scared because this girl was really enraged about her being pregnant. She would tell you this, all she did was talk to this girl as if she was her girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
she later returned with her mother mm-hmm. and introduced the worker as her best friend.
Oh.
Mom, please meet my best friend. So not only was a mind changed, a soul was changed in that same instance.
Jesus.
And this is not even a black woman that I'm talking about, but it was a black individual that went there.
And so, it was just a woman of God.
Yes,
you know what I'm
it was
saying?
A woman
who,
of God.
People who know how like to really, I'm really doing this Jesus thing.
Right. Let's do Jesus
Let's
work.
Do this Jesus thing.
Yes.
And I like that, well, not like, I caught something you said, and we're going to wrap it up in a minute, but something that you said, that this girl was so afraid
yes.
of being pregnant that it was showing physically.
Yes.
What are we doing as a community that we are instilling that much of a fearful stigma around pregnancy that people are literally physically
having a reaction
to the thought of being pregnant? That we have literally made people feel their lives are ruined
yes.
because of it. And me speaking as someone now who has two children now,
correct.
Who I've never been motivated more by anything in my entire life.
But for them.
By them,
right?
I could do anything.
Well,
like,
of course.
Like, what
sure.
do you mean?
Right. You're like, a mom.
I can open another business today
yes.
if my child needs me to
yes.
to buy shoes. Like,
girl.
She wants a unicorn. Yes, you can have a unicorn.
Yeah, right. There's a unicorn that exists.
Give me a minute. I'll do whatever. We're gonna get a unicorn.
We're gonna get it done.
But
I you know, to speak to that, I would say the fear that we have put into girls that become pregnant, it's a fear of losing. I like to think of, let me think of this analogy. If you guys can picture this, you can insert your favorite news program that you would like to watch, and I'm not going to go off and give any names, but whatever it is that you normally watch. When a girl is pregnant, she turns on this news station. You see the big talking head. But at the very, very bottom, you see what the weather's like today, what was great on the, what house is selling today, mm-hmm. What the president is saying today, what kind of sales we're having for this weekend, and is this a holiday weekend? A girl is actually hearing everything that you're seeing, but processing it through the lens of the weather, the house, the career, the everything. So she's processing all of these things, and that's what brings a woman to such fear.
Mm-hmm.
If we stop telling women that they cannot do this and there's no one to help them, then they won't physically act in aggression, but not even know that they're acting in aggression.
Mm-hmm.
If we actually were there to support them instead of saying, if you do this, your life is ruined, or if we stop the whole thought of saying, oh my gosh, what you're doing is so wrong, how about say, how can I help you in this time? That will stop a lot of the fear and anger and resentment and the running to this thing and running to this guy or running to these kind of substitutes that we are trying to fill this God-sized hole in our heart.
Mm-hmm.
That won't happen. She will be able to walk into a place and know that other Christians love her. Bring that stigma down. We love you first
and foremost, above anything else.
That's it. And if I think every woman knew that, it wouldn't be this uproar of controversy.
Thank you
Ashley.
This has been I'm so glad this was my first one, the first this type for the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
And my girl is currently not really using social media right now, so I'm going to get her back on social
media.
Yes,
she is. She's going to get me all the way together with my edges. Yes, all the way together.
But just a reminder to stay connected to Melanin Meditations on Instagram at Melanin Meditations. You can also sign up for the yoga retreats and just individual Black Girl Magic yoga classes at melaninmeditations.com. Again, come back. Be sure you have your alerts on. Share the podcast because we have way more meditations coming up and a lot more girl chats going on throughout the summer. So no matter what you're doing, remember that God loves you, love and light, and God bless.